Martin Solveig, that's a low. How appropriate is that, being a Thursday and all the rest of it, on the day that we normally say hello to Defoe, Sean Defoe, to give him his proper introduction today, given some of the stuff we'll be talking about. Yes, slightly shaken, somewhat stirred, it is Mr. Defoe, Sean Defoe. Hello, Sean.
Well, I don't know about shaken, but I am usually shook. So
that we should explain. You're running in out of the rain with the dog.
I thought, you know what, this would be a great time to go and get a little bit of afternoon walk. The dog is a bit kind of looking at me with those sad eyes, being aww, like, do you have to work? Can we not have fun? And so I decided to do that. And then, of course, the heavens opened and trapped me under the tree.
Oh, typical.
So, but we made it back.
What's your doggy's name?
Sammy. So he's now relatively satisfied, and no doubt will be whining for food for another minute or two if you don't hear him on this call.
Well, fantastic. He's always welcome. Now, of course, the introduction there was kind of James Bond-esque, let's just say, and a lot of talk about it at the minute, because yesterday, of course, was 60 years of Bond being celebrated. Dr. No coming to your TVs, or your cinema screens, I should say, and a big thing and a big deal. And as I was saying yesterday to Wayne Brown, who did a little bit on the show with me about it, nobody knew if it was going to be a success. It was a film on a relatively small budget, even though they had some big stars in it. They weren't spending an absolute fortune on it. And who knew that it was going to become a franchise and 60 years on, going to be talking about it?
Absolutely. And now all the talk is, of course, about who is going to be the next Bond, now that Daniel Craig has hung up his boots, having one of the most successful Bonds, I think. Pretty much the only Bond I've known since, like... That has been out since I've been going to cinemas. Like, I remember being in Dadasau when the first Daniel Craig Bond came out. So there you go. But one of the things that they're saying now is that he's never going to be in his 20s again. There will never be, like, a 20-something-year-old, but never a Gen Z Bond. The youngest he's going to be is a millennial, which actually just kind of got me, tickled my amusement when I was thinking about it earlier, that there's the next Bond could possibly be a millennial, if they don't go for the likes of, say, an Idris Elba, who a lot of people want, but you wonder, is he just that little bit too old now to start it? And the producers of Bond have kind of been explaining that, look, he's meant to be this sort of little bit more grisly character.
Oh, yeah, lived in, world weary, all that.
Exactly. And that's very much where they took Daniel Craig in the last few. Because if you go back, and it sort of shocked me when I watched Casino Royale recently, how young he looks.
I know.
In Casino Royale, even though it's only, what, less than 20 years ago?
Yeah, God, it's mad.
And a complete change from sort of the grisly figure that we saw in the last few Bonds. So there you go. Never a Bond in his 20s. Even though I think when we think of Bond, we don't necessarily think of, you know, an older man. We don't necessarily think of which one was. Like, Craig was 51 when he filmed the last one, No Time to Buy. Roger Moore was 57 in A View to a Kill.
There you go.
Nearing retirement, closer to retirement age than he was to actually getting the gun. So I think Sean Connery was 52 filming one of those.
He was.
So yeah, they're all in the older age category, which means, you know, 40 is the new Bond.
Well, there you have it. Well, you still have a ways to go there, Sean, in terms of throwing your hat in the ring, let's just say.
Yeah, my audition tape, didn't get all that far.
Hey, listen, plenty of time to practice. But now, you know what? If you ever wanted to give Sean a prezi, and again, there are many things he would gratefully accept, but among them would be Lindt chocolate. Now, this sounds like an ad for Lindt chocolate, but it is not, can we say. But yeah, you love your Lindt.
I do. It's hard not to, isn't it? You know, it's in the Christmas stocking every year. It's one of those things that's just beautiful. My favorite, actually, one of my favorite moments on holiday was, this is a really strange story. I don't know why I told it. But anyway, we went up this, I can't even remember the name of it, up a mountain in Switzerland. A Jungfrau, I think it's called. You can get a train to the top, and it's the highest point you can get to by train in Europe, right up in the mountains. Your ears start to pop and everything. And what did they have in classic Swiss manner? I just thought there might be some observatory you could walk around, maybe on the snow in a glacier.
Yes.
But of course, at the very top of this mountain, thousands of feet in the air, was a Lindt chocolate shop that sold you all lovely delectables at that sort of height.
Your year was
made. It was absolutely
made. Your year was made. But now, why we're talking about it today, explain that.
Yeah, so this is sort of similar to the Colin the Caterpillar row that went on with Aldi and Marks and Spencer's for a while. And a Swiss court has ordered Lidl to destroy its gold chocolate bunnies and melt down all remaining stock after it lost a court battle with Lynch. Because, you know, you see them coming up to Easter, the Lynch bunnies that are out, and shock horror, Little did their own version that was a lot cheaper. They've actually lost a court case in the commercial court in Switzerland, saying that the Lynch product was so well known to the public and the brand was so there that they were likely to be confused, and no longer could Little sell said bunny.
And we're talking about thousands of these bunnies on shelves all over the place that are going to now have to be... Now, I think the court did say that they could be melted down. They wouldn't have to be totally destroyed.
So you melt them down, turn them into something else. I mean, I will happily...
Or just give them to you.
Any excess stock that is going...
Or me.
If you see in your local Lidl a box full of chocolate that is due for the furnace, I will happily give it at home.
Yeah, indeed. Keep us in mind there. Do you know what it is? I'd love to try a blind test with you, with the two of them, to see which... Because they look the very same. Different colour ribbon and bell and all the rest. But if you didn't see them and you just had to taste them, I would... Love to know. Love to know.
That would be interesting. Maybe next time I'm down in Waterford, maybe we'll pop in. We'll do that. We'll do Pepsi Coke. We'll do the.
We'll have to go on. I was just going to say on eBay to find one of them little bunnies at that stage.
Yeah, with the rate the chocolate is going up as well, we'll definitely have to expense it. I hope you have a large chocolate expense account.
Oh, Sean, I'll tell you, the things we do in the name of research and furtherment of humanity in general. Listen, we're smack out of time. That's where we've got to leave it. Great as always talking to you. Quick mention on your Explain to Me podcast. What's going on?
Yes. So today we are doing a very kind of speculative one. What would the Parliament look like in the United Ireland? Would the Dáil stay? Would you keep the Shannon? Would you have to keep Stormont? How would we all be governed if this island was suddenly reunified tomorrow morning?
My God. Well, wherever you find your podcast, simply put in Sean Defoe. You won't be sorry. He'll explain it all and he'll do it in less than 10 or 15 minutes. So won't be wasting your time either. Sean, always good to talk to you, man.
Cheers, Ollie. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.